This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is warning Congress to pass legislation containing more money for the war in Iraq before leaving for the holiday break. Democrats say no. Meantime, Pentagon leaders say they'll begin layoffs. The White House warns that U.S. troops are at risk with a lack of funding. Martial law in Pakistan will be lifted next month as ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. He was sworn in today for his third term. Al Jazeera TV today airing a portion of the latest audio tape, reportedly of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In the tape, a voice that resembles that of bin Laden urges European nations to pull their support for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. To cut greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030, Americans won't have to drive less or cut back on lighting their homes. A report from two business groups says just buying more fuel-efficient cars and energy-saving appliances will be enough to cut emissions between one-third and one-half. A jump in the price of oil reflected the shutdown of an underground pipeline that supplies one-fifth of all U.S. crude. The pipeline travels between Canada and the Midwest. It caught fire yesterday in Minnesota, killing two workers. In St. Petersburg, Florida, last night, Republican presidential contenders debated face-to-face during a CNN live TV broadcast, also carried online via YouTube. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squaring off over illegal immigration, each accusing the other of using the services. In Sudan, a court has found a British teacher guilty of inciting religious hatred because she let her 7-year-old students name a teddy bear Mohammed. Her sentence, 15 days in prison and deportation, she could have gotten 40 lashes and 6 months in jail. A recent study commissioned by the UN and World Bank indicates that mankind is not prepared for a bird flu pandemic. The World Health Organization is worried that the current virus could mutate into a form that makes it highly contagious to humans. Bird flu caused the deaths of 157 people worldwide since 2003 out of 261 cases reported. And former Republican Congressman Henry Hyde has passed away at the age of 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Working the graveyard shift is being linked to cancer, as indicated by a newly released study from the World Health Organization. Researchers say that those who stay up overnight and work under fluorescent lights are most susceptible. Our bodies produce melatonin during nighttime slumber, which is known to suppress the formation of tumors. Quarterly profits at federally insured banks and thrifts have plunged to a 4-year low. U.S. banking institutions have been forced to take multi-billion dollar charges as a result of home loan defaults. Home foreclosures have doubled from this time last year. In October alone, more than 50,000 Americans lost their homes. Analysts say they expect the situation to get worse in the first half of next year. Hedge fund giant Citadel will pump $2.5 billion into online broker E-Trade to help balance its dwindling coffers. Ford Motors has reached a final settlement with 1 million people in 4 states who sued, claiming the Ford Explorer SUV was prone to rollovers. The dollar amount of the class action settlement not revealed. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $91 a barrel, gold trading at $802.30 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 22 points to end at 13,311, NASDAQ up 5 points, the S&P 500 flat. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. We'll be right back.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Well, good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 80 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, November the 29th, so if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday, that's November the 29th, you're listening to a live show. And you're welcome to call in and talk with myself and our two guests this evening, who I will be this evening I'll be introducing them shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the guests' websites. You'll find links there to the audio archives from previous shows organized in a calendar. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as we speak. I'm logged in there. And you'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site. There you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which Strictly Confidential is only a small part. You'll find links to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And did I give the numbers out? The telephone number, is the toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. It will save the studio a buck, and that's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I am so glad to be with you guys this afternoon. I managed to get in a nap this afternoon, so I'm feeling kind of perky. yesterday I didn't have my nap, and so I wasn't quite as perky as, you know, the nap does an old guy good. You know, it really does. Our guests this evening, I'm very much looking forward to talking to them. We have a guest who's been with us before, and he'll be joining us with a guest who has not been here before. Most all of you who listen to the show regularly remember Ernest Cole. He'll be with us tonight. If you did not hear the interviews with Ernest Cole, I'll remind you that he's an international recording star. And he's had 17 consecutive top 10 singles, six of which soared to the number one position in Dance Music Authority and Billboard and Street Sounds and Dance Music Report. He's received the Dance Music Authority's Best Male Vocalist Award in 1990, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, and nominations for Song of the Year, Best Producer Arranger, and as well as Best Male Vocalist. He has worked with production and arranging for artists like Ms. Pepper Maché, Vicky Shepherd, Phoebe Snow, just to name a very few. He's been in stage work. He's been in Cabaret, Carousel, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor, Dreamcoat, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and yes, he was Frankenfurter. He was also in Warner Brothers' The World According to Garp. He's also been featured in articles in Billboard and DMA, along with DMA is Dance Music Authority, along with Ernest Cole. I'm thrilled to have Mr. Steve Skinner. Now, Steve is an absolute legend in the dance music world. Steve's been around for a good little while, and any DJ will recognize his name as someone whose mixes that they love to play. Steve Skinner originally comes from the Boston area, but he lives in New York since 1975. He's been a session player, a keyboard player, arranger, a producer, writer, writes pop music, jazz, TV, music, commercials. He's worked as an arranger and a programmer for Bette Midler, Jewel, Celine Dion, R. Kelly, Taylor Diane, Diana Ross, Luther Vandross, the Bee Gees, Judy Collins, Patti LaBelle, Freddie Jackson, the Manhattan Transfer, Spyro Jar. It goes a long, long way. The list is quite long. Chaka Khan, I just pick a name. You can throw a dart and you'll hit someone he's worked with. He's also a frequent contributor to Electronic Musician Magazine. He also owns and operates a state-of-the-art studio, which is really quite amazing. If you'll Stop by his website. There's a link to his website and to Ernest's website at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Just go to the strictlyconfidentialradio.com homepage and scroll down to today's calendar date. You'll find links to all of the things I've talked about. I want to send out a special thank you to Victor, Mr. VAC. A very special thanks goes out to you tonight. Without your help, we couldn't have pulled this together. VJC is the music programmer and mixer over at Disco 935 in New York City. Please stop by disco935.net. That's disco935.net to find out more and to listen live. Victor has also been a guest on the Strictly Confidential. If you'd like to hear the interview with Victor, you can go back to the September calendar, which is on the main page. It's September 25th. And Victor jumped in this afternoon and helped us come up with all of the music tracks that we wanted, and Victor's just amazing that way. He was on it. The minute we contacted him, Victor was there. Thank you so much, Victor. And gee whiz, Steve Skinner, Ernest Cole, welcome to the show.
How are you?
Hello.
I'm wonderful. Now, I know who How Are You. Now, can both of you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Yes, sir, I can hear you. Now, just so the guests, the listeners will know, they'll want to identify your voices. So, Ernest, let's hear you.
Okay, I'm right here. Hello.
Hello, and then we'll have Steve, we'll introduce Steve's voice.
This is Steve's voice, saying hello.
Greetings to you. Greetings to you. Steve, you just amazed me. I was looking through your discography this afternoon, and I made the mistake of hitting print, and about 15 pages later.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Oh Lord! Never have I seen such. Apparently, you worked with the music for the original Broadway production of Rent too. Did you? What did you do there?
Jonathan Larson was one of my very first clients. He when I had a one room apartment, he would come to it and do demos. And we just had a relationship that went over the years, and he wrote Rent over a period of about 7 years or so, and I would produce the demos. And then when the show started developing into a real show, my demos became the arrangements of the show. And then when it came time to do the record, he had always, you know, he died, I guess, about a year or so before the record was done, but he had told his family that he wanted to be involved in recordings, and as chance would have it, Arif Mardin, who I had already been working with, got the job to produce the cast album and asked me to be co-producer of it. So yeah, I was kind of involved with that right from the beginning, right from the cocktail napkin stage.
Well, you go way back. You go all the way back to the Bee Gees, but you've certainly stayed current. Ernest Cole, how did you manage to come upon this guy and snag him for your project? You done good, son.
He actually walked into one of my recording sessions being brought by one of my best friends and who was also an arranger on the project, who had jobbed him in to play synthesizer, and it was like my very first project called Avant-Garde. And he just played so amazingly, and we hit it off, and we then started collaborating, basically.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. So he's as good as...
This is like over 20 years ago.
Yeah, so you go way back.
Oh my gosh, we go back like the early 80s, Steve?
Sure. Like very early 80s, because I met Daryl, and Daryl was our mutual friend. And I met him in college, which I got out of, I got out of college in 77, so I might even have met you in 79 or 80, something like that.
It had to be back, yes.
Yeah.
And we were doing Avant-Garde because Avant-Garde opened in New York in 81.
There you go.
So all the tracks had to be laid before that.
Yeah.
Wow, and by...
Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was just about to jump in with you mentioned Daryl. Did you mean Daryl Russ?
No, Daryl Carpenter. He was a co-writer with us, and unfortunately, we've lost Daryl to AIDS. And he was both of our best friends and an incredible musician, an incredible writer. and an incredible person and an incredible vocalist. I mean, what a voice on this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was just like, we were like this great writing team, and to lose him was such a great loss. He actually co-wrote one of my current hits that Steve did, co-wrote and produced and did an amazing mix on, to Save the Love 207.
Ah, yes, yes. That is a wonderful track. It really is. And again, what did you do on To Save the Love 07, Steve?
Well, we wrote it in, must have been 85 or something, correct, Ernest?
He wrote it in 86.
86.
He
wrote that song.
We were writing it for, originally it was going to go on the Sooner or Later album, on Dice Buddha Sutra, remember? And then they put out Sooner or Later first, then they put out Bad to Be Good, Bump Me to the Beat, Anything to Get Ahead, and then that was their last record, and they went under. My record was the last record on Buddha Sutra, and that's when the whole Morris Levy thing went down, and he went to jail, and all that wahoo happened. And we then moved to Wide Angle Records to begin with. That was their first time on Wide Angle, and that's when To Save the Love originally came out, and Robbie Leslie came in and did the original mix.
Right, right. And then what I did with it now was a remix. Ernest sent me the vocals, and I did the one, I guess it's called the Big Family Mix, right?
Correct.
Well, yes, it is, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was I had asked Ernest once before how you came up with Big Family Club. Now, I know his version. What is your story about why it's called Big Family Club Mix? That's an unusual mix name.
I have three kids, so.
So what Ernest told us was absolutely true, right, Ernest?
It just cost me like that.
I will tell you a story.
There's a lot of people living in this house here.
Steve sort of freaked me out today. This morning he sent me an email, and he said, in the email he said, Chris is going, this is his oldest son, is going to be going to college in 2.5 years. And I said to myself, what? 2.5 years? Christopher is going to college? This is like weird to me. Oh my God, he was just born. He was just a baby. I mean, we were mixing Follow Your Heart when he was born. This is just like yesterday to me. And
I totally get that, yes.
Like, well, Greg Morris, when he said he was going to take driver's ed. No!
I recently heard from an old friend of mine who lives in Jacksonville, and she and I knew each other way back, when we were teenagers. Her name's Kathy, and so in a recent email, she was talking about her son that was in college, and my jaw dropped. It just never occurred to me that so much time has passed. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been an incredible, incredible working relationship, and the amount of the catalog that we have is just, when I look at it, it's wonderful that we could accomplish this and are still doing it, and have a new album coming out, which is like fantastic, and Steve has contributed to that as well. And
well, I think we ought to.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we definitely want to run To Save the Love 2007, the Big Family Club Mix, but please complete and we'll run that track. I know the listeners would love to hear it. I like the song. It's a great song.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love that.
Okay. Then, Bob, let's go ahead and run that. It's To Save the Love 2007. Then this is the Steve Skidder, who is on the show with us with Ernest Cole. It's the Big Family Club Mix.
against hope, what's against words? Unless we believe, to trust is uncertain.
Wow. Ernest, what was your first reaction?
When I first heard it, I was on the floor. I was totally on the floor because I didn't even know. With this remix, I just said, go ahead and do what you want to do. I had done the record so many times, and so many remixes, I couldn't do it anymore. And I'd already worked with a couple other producers, and I ended up having to do another remix with one of the other producers because they weren't pulling through, and I had to just jump in and help them. And when I got it from Steve, I think it was really early in the morning one morning, and I think it was on a Saturday. And when I put it on, I was like, oh, my God, this is fabulous. It's just such an awesome arrangement. The strings in there are just fantastic. Thank you.
Well, I have to agree. There was a section there toward the end where it almost sounded like it came to an end, but the strong bass beat, and then there's a slight pause, and it picks up again. Did Steve do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's fabulous. I always love tracks that do that. I'm a sucker for any track that does that. That's just wonderful.
It really takes you on a journey. It goes like in like a plateaus and a plateaus and a plateaus, and it just keeps you going. It's like almost like a dream. You know what I mean? And it keeps going with you. It's really a great track.
Steve, what sort of equipment did you use to do that?
Well, it was mainly in Pro Tools. That's sort of the basic thing, but I have a lot of software synthesizers and a few hardware synthesizers. I think that the bass was probably my Mini Moog, which was made in 1973 or something. That survived all the studio purges I've been through. But most of the stuff, most of those sounds, all come from within the computer. Samplers and synthesizers that are sort of their plugins to the main software, and it's amazing what kind of equipment you can have now. I have all these boxes that basically don't exist. I tell people I have the best mixing board that I've ever owned, and it's a picture. It's a picture on a screen, but it's a wonderful board.
So different from our early days, correct, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything we did then was sound going through wires, going through boxes,
Well, like in the original Sooner or Later, we could not have, well, the first mix, we could not have claps and cowbells in the same record.
Right, because the drum machine could only do one or the other. You'd pull one chip out, you'd put the clap chip in, and then pull the clap chip out and put the cowbell chip in.
My stars. You had to have a chip change to do cowbells and claps? That's astounding.
Yeah,
you go
and buy a cowbell chip, and open up the box and pull out the chip and stick in the other one.
So these are probably, what, $85, $90, $100 a chip at least?
Something like that, yeah. Oh, yeah, just the difference in what you could do. And that was before you could even use the computer. You'd use a box that you could compose the music on. But it wasn't until later that you could actually do it on a home computer.
I mean, my first record was done with a full orchestra. You just were the only synthesizer on it.
Right, right. That was all live players, yeah.
Yeah, there was a full band underneath it and everything, and full string section, horn section, brass, the whole nine yards. I mean, the computers like this did not exist back when we started.
Sure.
It was real, the whole thing had to be charted out and arranged, and you couldn't change things as quickly as we do now by any means. There was no such thing like the remixes like the way they are created today, which are almost most like new production.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I have to laugh. Someone in our chat room just said, Steve has cowbell chips. I've only ever run across cow chips. I didn't expect to read that. Oh, sometimes they speak up on me. Well, Steve, that machine has to be valuable at this point. I mean, not that it was inexpensive when you got it, but is it not a classic piece of electronics at this point?
No, it's a doorstop.
Oh.
and I got rid of most of my doorstops, yeah. There's a few. I think that, like the Mini Moog that I was talking about, that is valuable.
And that makes some incredible sound, too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's because you just can't duplicate it with digital stuff. But some of these other machines that, you know, had 56 bits of information or whatever, you know, tiny little bits of information, they really aren't worth very much now.
Well, Ernest, wasn't that you and Tom Moulton where we got into a conversation about cowbells and
yes,
Tom
indeed.
Moulton?
Yes.
Oh my God! And Tom Moulton goes through the tracks pulling the cowbells out. If I understood that correctly.
Oh, he hates cowbells. Well, Ernest, your thing was cymbals for many years. Right? You did not like cymbals.
Me? I've gotten used to cymbals.
Now you like cymbals. I remember for many years, though, it's like, no cymbals.
There was
no cymbals.
A thing about cymbals for a while.
Yes.
Believe it or not, I'm having trouble with snares recently. I don't know why. And remember how much we were so into the snares for a while on some of our early records? Like,
well, yeah,
I Think I Love
80s,
You,
but...
and we brought in Chris Lord Alge just because of his snare sound.
Right.
I don't know. I'm really particular about the way a snare sounds lately. You do great snares, Steve, by the way.
Thank you.
I love your role, too.
I believe in alternative snares, you know. Regular old snare drums, it's time to, in dance music anyways, it's time to move on to something else that makes a sound on 2 and 4 other than a regular old snare drum.
Right. But,
wow, I wish we had a sampler of the evolution of the snare drum effect. I mean, that would be fascinating to actually. I know you guys could hear it in your heads. We can't all hear that in our heads. Well, how would you describe the change?
Well, the snare drum's been through huge evolutions. In the Motown records, there would be on beat 2 and 4 is where it usually lives, and on the Motown records, you'd have the snare drum plus a clap. Plus a guitar doing a short note, you'd have just a whole bunch of people, plus a tambourine, a whole bunch of people all hitting 2 and 4 to make that accent. And then in the 80s, when digital reverb came out, all of a sudden you had the famous 80s big snare, you know, doom, 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 like that.
Which we did at
wow.
one of our records.
Right.
Like
and
sooner or later.
And that's how... Brand puts its decade brand on all the records that it's on. It's like, oh yeah, that's an 80s record. And then that died out. Now it's sort of, it's very open actually. People can do all kinds of sounds. I mean, you hear a lot of massive claps now on 2 and 4. That's a nice, Timbaland does a lot of that. That's a nice approach.
How many changes did you, I know you can't enumerate them all, but how many, You must have done more than just the drums. Did you added instruments too, Steve?
Oh, on To Save the Love we're talking about?
Yes.
All the instruments. I played all the instruments on that. The only thing I started with was the voice.
You mean to tell me all you got was the voice track?
Yes.
My stars! That must be somewhat Pro Tools. I need to go get a copy of that. That's just amazing.
And then sit down with that fat manual.
I imagine it's software you have to marry to understand.
Yeah. Plus, you know, it helps to have played keyboards and all that stuff too. You know,
I see. Well, do you cue it by actually connecting a keyboard to the computer so that you're able to control it that way?
Oh yes. I spend a lot of time. The keyboard is sort of the main input to it, so I do a lot of keyboard playing.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, the things that you heard in there were mostly all played on the keyboard.
Ernest, I think it's wonderful. I really do. It's a great track. And which CD is that on, Ernest?
To Save the Love is off the new album that is forthcoming, which the name of the album is Eternally. And it is being dedicated in memorial tribute to my late manager and husband, Brian Scott Harper, and Daryl Carpenter, who co-wrote the song, and also Doug House, who also wrote song Eternally with Morissette Martin, who we lost to AIDS recently. So it's a very special project, and there are two current singles out right now off this new album. To Save the Love 207, which has gone number one already. Well, in history, it's gone number one 3 times. And Live Like You Are Dying, which is also out, which Steve was the vocal producer on. And nominated for Best Dance Track of the Year, and they're announcing the awards tomorrow evening. So I'm kind of nervous about that one.
Really? Are they announcing the awards? Wow. Is it in New York?
I believe they're announcing them in Florida.
I'll be darned. Nobody told me. I might run over to see something like that. What is it? Is it going to be televised, or is this like an industry thing?
No, I believe they're doing it on radio, and I believe it's through the StonewallSociety.com. Are you familiar with them?
Well, of course, anything Stonewall I'm pretty much familiar with, but if that is a music site, then no, I don't know it.
It's the Out Music Awards through the StonewallSociety.com. I know that that's the website address.
Well, I'll be darned. And well, how about the track Only You? Now, that's one that we have in the list this evening. I'll definitely want to get to, and it's called the Tornado Club Mix. What is the story on that track?
Well, Only You, we originally did for the Importance of Being album, and it was the first track we went in to record for the Importance of Being album, and we decided to do a cover. And when we went in, Steve said to me, "What's your favorite song?" And I said, "What?" And I said, "Why?" And he says, "Because you're going to be singing this for the rest of your life." And I thought, oh, God. Okay. Well, I came up with two songs. One was, and Steve, you're going to crack up with this one, Something Good from the Sound of Music.
Oh, my stars. You didn't. You didn't,
I did,
Judah.
I
deny it. Well, let's
I'm not
going to that, Bobby.
I love it. I love that song. Yeah, I do all my mic checks with that. I mean,
yeah.
You can really, you can tell if you're messing your voice up or not, because it's a great song. It's Rodgers and Hammerstein, my gosh, it's classic. And Only You, which was originally a ballad by an early 80s group called Yaz, which was out of the UK, with Alison Moyet and Vince Clarke. And we took it and turned it into, we started it as a ballad and turned it into a dance track. And this Tornado Club mix is one that was requested to be done for NMC when we went with NMC Records, and that was through Ichiban Records, and then it went on to the Importance of Being album.
And so, and this is another mix that Steve created?
Actually, Steve and I did it together.
I see. And so did Steve get it?
That was down through Old Studio on 30th, correct, Steve?
No, and this is the...
The Tornado Club Mix of Only You.
Yeah, we did that on 30th Street, yes.
Right, and you know, actually, you're going to love this one, Peter. You know who had a studio right next door at the same time?
Oh, I know it's going to be somebody that floors me. Who?
Stan Harrison.
For real. You know, he was in the show the other night, and it just blew everybody away.
Isn't he fantastic?
Well, yeah, fantastic may not be high enough accolades. I tell you what, the man, he really knows his stuff. And what was interesting to us is he was all the variations in the music, and then all of a sudden on one of your tracks, he kicks into this Motown thing. It's just amazing to me.
Wait till you hear what he's doing on the new record. He's just awesome. He's such a great guy. It's all been like one big New York musical family, but actually it's gone global now. It's fantastic. And we all started in this small little circle in New York, and it's just gone universal. It's so cool. And that's right where we did Only You.
And Steve, you were about to say something, I think.
Oh, I think it's Stan Harrison is playing on your new record.
Mm-hmm.
That is wonderful. I haven't seen him for a bit, but he's great. Stan always does something different than what you would expect, but you end up really liking it. You know? It's like you bring him into the studio and say, let's put a solo here, and he does something that was really not what you had in mind at all, but then you say, oh, yeah, what a great idea.
And then there's the other statement, one take Stan.
One what?
One take Stan. He does it in one take.
That's right. That was his nickname, One Take Stan. Right.
And he would lay so much stuff. We were like, well, we got to edit some of it. It's just, but what do we edit? It's all flawless.
Well, he made quite an impression on the show. In fact, our dear friend Billy Shears, who does a Saturday evening show, Night Sounds with Billy Shears, actually was so impressed with it. That following weekend, he did a segment on Stan Harrison on Night Sounds, which, I mean, he moved from my show to Night Sounds like within 2 days. He really did make a splash. He's really excellent.
Yeah, and, it's just so cool. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to jump in and say that we definitely want to run the only U-Track, the Tornado Club mix, but please go ahead and then we'll run it next.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just think it's so cool how everybody's coming around and are on this album, because it's such a special album, and the fact that it is in memorial tribute to these fantastic people, and it's just like a whole musical family that's like doing this piece, and it's really great. It's really wonderful.
Wonderful. Well, Bob, if you would run the only U-Track, it is the Tornado Club mix, which was mixed with both Ernest and Steve's input.
Looking from a window above, it's like a story of love. Can you hear me? Came back only yesterday. I'm moving further away. Won't you near me? All I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. And all I ever knew, only you.
Can't take no more. Wonder if you'll understand. It's just the touch of your hand behind the closed door. All I needed was a love you gave. All I needed for another day.
I guess you guys had a ball working on that together.
We really did. It was really, really fun. I gotta just tell you, because it was such a, it's a romantic piece, but it had substance to it.
Did you both fairly much agree on the outcome? Well, the outcome, of course, is the final product. But during the manufacture, during the mixing, was it harmonious? Shall we say? Was there a lot of controversy involved in it?
Medium amount. We would discuss things.
What? I couldn't hear you, Steve.
We would discuss things. We didn't always agree. We didn't always agree on everything, but the outcome was good.
I don't think we've ever had a fight ever.
No,
really, never.
We would disagree about things, but never a fight.
Never a fight. We would disagree about things like, no, I don't want a flute in this record.
Right. Maybe so, yeah.
Or, I'll just say one word to you, Steve, and you're gonna, you'll get what I'm saying.
Okay.
The key, remember that lyric, and we looked for the backup vocalist?
Yeah, that was fun. The deed.
Anyway, secret story between Steve and I.
Now, I don't remember the female vocalist and the da 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 da. Who is that? Do you remember?
We can't say.
We can't say. Okay.
We really shouldn't. But we were producing an artist. And it was a record. It was a dance record. And this artist had never done a dance record before. Or I don't even know if the artist had ever done a record before, but was very passionate about their art. Wasn't a great vocalist, but anyways, we were producing them at a request of the management. And her vocal was laid down, and we brought a really great team of backing vocalists in. And when they heard this one thing that they had to do an answer to, we looked up for them to sing, and they weren't there in the booth.
They were on the floor laughing, literally. We looked through the glass and there were no people there, and there was no singing, because what would happen in the lead vocal had caused them to laugh so hard that they were all sitting on the floor in pain.
Literally, it took about 15 minutes to get the session back up and running because we were all honking that hard.
That was a great moment.
We've had more good times doing these records than anything. I don't think we've ever really had a bad time in anything. I mean, except losing people. That's been the hardest thing about the whole thing. You know, people dying. That's been the worst part about
the fact that you've had such a great time doing the track, it really comes through. It's sort of an underlying spirit to the music. It sounds like you're having fun. It really does. It really actually makes a difference when you can do it.
And Steve's such a great person to work with. I can communicate very easily to him. He also knows a lot of the times what I'll like and what I won't like. At this point, I just say, go and do what you want to do. Just like I did, he's just completed his mix on the next single that's coming out from the album, and it's really awesome. It's another song that we both co-wrote together, and we both co-produced. I just said, go do what you want to do. Literally was not expecting what came back to me. Turned that record inside out and around, and it is totally another record that is so awesome that when you hear it, cannot name the title, but when you hear it, when it comes out at the top of the year, I'm sure you will fall down. If you don't, I'll be surprised.
Oh, we have to keep it a secret after all this build-up, huh?
I've got to, because then I won't have anything to talk about.
Oh, that's too funny. Ernest, I seriously do not think there's going to be an episode that you don't have anything to talk about. I just really, I'm not by that at all. Steve, it comes to my mind, we've been talking about the singers. Do you sing, or have you sung on any of Ernest? Have you sung on anyone? You're so creative, you've got to sing.
I am just not a singer. I just am not. The way my vocal cords are built or something, I just am not a singer. You know, I have two sons, one who's 13 and one who's 16, who are both very musical. One of them sings, one of them just does not. I said, welcome to my DNA, you know. It's I wish I did. And he's like, thanks, Dad, you know.
Well, the one that sings, is he very interested in what you do? Is he following in your footsteps?
He is, kind of. The older one is actually also an artist, and he really wants to do that. Now, you mentioned my webpage. He did the caricatures of me on my webpage.
Yes.
But the younger one seems to have an interest in music as a profession, and I just had him playing guitar on something that I was working on today. Because his finger picking is better than mine is already, and he's 13. So I said, "Hey, play this." So he's a very talented kid.
That's amazing.
Well, you played guitar on my new track, Steven. You're pretty awesome.
The guitar play?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sam's better already.
Well, something comes to mind about living in New York. Every time I'm having guests in New York, and I'm starting to get the impression that everybody lives like next door to each other. Stan Harrison was next door in the studio, and then we had DC LaRue on the other night, and his neighbor is the cowboy who used to sing in the Village People, and then
oh, I know
Ernest,
Randy.
You were in. Oh, you know him too. I'd love to get
Randy
him on this.
I know Randy
quite
well. In fact, well, I just met him yesterday.
I just met him the other night too.
You
know,
really?
Randy,
that's
too, a... Steve. Actually, he came into our recording session when we were bouncing the tracks over for Sooner or Later. Remember? That's when you first met him.
Wow. I think he might have remembered that, but I did not remember that. That's cool.
Well, I bet he's got some stories to tell. If either of you guys run into him, please drop a bug in his ear and give him my email address if you want.
I think that it was this morning or it was last night, because he just wrote me. I can't believe this. This is too funny.
I just know he's got
dirt.
It's
a really small circle. I mean,
oh yeah.
It's you ran into someone in a record store. Who is it you were talking about the other day?
I met Tom Moulton.
Oh, that's right. It was Tom, and he was looking at your hair. I just love it. It sounds like New York is like this is like a little town almost. But
It is. People from out of town, when they come and visit, they're amazed at how many. Like, I'll be showing them around, and I'll be running into people I know on the street all the time. And they're like, "How do you do this? You know, there's 8 million people here. How do you keep running into people you know?" I don't know, but you do.
It's really strange, and it's the strangest moment. It's like, I don't know how it happens, but within this last, I would say, year period I've been doing this album, I have put back the family of musicians and artists that I've worked with over the years, that Brian and I had worked with, to put this whole album project together, and they've all come on to it. Like, you know, Steve I've always stayed in touch with, but and have always worked with, but, you know, Stan and Elliot and now Lance is on the project, who actually, it's funny because there's another, like, 6 degrees of separation with Lance. Steve gave Lance his ASCAP award. It's like a small world.
It must be. It must be. And we have the guests tomorrow evening are from New York. It's Elmer and Gus. They are probably the gay couple that's been together longer than any other couple in the world. They've been together 62 years, if you can believe
that. Oh, my.
Good for them.
Oh, my. They met way back in the World War, and they've been hanging together ever since. They recently went, it was Massachusetts or Canada, I don't remember, to get married. So I'm really looking, they're both sharp as a tack, even though they've been together 62. So I'm really looking forward to talking, if you guys have a chance to listen in tomorrow evening or check out the archives. So there's more, and New York just seems to be the place to find interesting people.
I will state this, there's no other city like New York. I mean, and I don't really care to live anywhere else. I will travel other places, but there's no place like New York.
Well, I should point out I should do a radio thing. I don't announce the number enough. The telephone number, if you'd like to call in and speak with us, is 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-4, head on. Or you can use 304-658-3333, and we'd love to hear from you. I just wanted to throw that out. I often don't give the telephone number out, except for the beginning of the show, and then people don't remember it in the middle of the show. And I sometimes get emails about that. Well, tell us about the Sooner or Later track. Now, that's one that I love talking to you guys, but I want to hear the music, too, and it's such a conflict of interest. Like, do I play the music or do I talk these? So tell us about Sooner or Later. That's in our list this evening.
Well, Sooner or Later was actually the song that I really consider put me over the top. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
That was the one. I mean, we had had previous hits, but when Sooner or Later hit, it hit big and it hit worldwide, and it's never stopped. And it's been remixed so many times, and the last remix was flawlessly done, you know, by Steve and by Tom Moulton for the Hits album. And I'm told that it's going to be remixed again for an 80s remix classic. CD that's coming out. So I can't wait to hear how somebody else is going to take it into this century again after Steve and Tom have done such a wonderful job to it. But the original version was, there was some magical quality about it. It was really difficult for us because we were really limited at that time in the equipment that we had, as we were telling about earlier, and we had to really rely on vocals to do a lot of the stuff, and we actually laid the full 12-inch like we usually do. We don't just lay a radio version. We lay the full record out, and we start singing like backup vocals from the start of the record, and the ad-libs going from the start and into the lead all the way through the breakdown into the end, into the write-out. So we're doing like, you know, the full 8 minutes singing the whole thing. And
wow.
But Sooner or Later, there's a really funny story about this record. We had originally done a small eight-track demo, Steve? And
not even eight tracks, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, it was on your sequencer or something.
Yeah,
anyways,
it was a four-track thing, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. But you had bounced tracks together. I remember that.
Yes.
And it sounded really, really good because he's like really excellent, as you can tell. I had did an acetate pressing, and at that time, you would take the records around to the clubs, and you would have the different DJs test out the record and just get a crowd reaction. And at that point, the label was trying to make a decision whether to release the song Bad to Be Good or Sooner or Later first, and this was our way of checking out which one they were going to release. They chose Sooner or Later because they felt it had more pop potential, which indeed it did really well pop-wise, and also it was a cover and people would recognize the song. Even though it was originally done very folky rock by a group called The Grassroots way in the early 70s.
I remember like, way in the early 70s. I remember. I do.
So it was,
no,
it was
I was
such a
different saying that
version.
I remember the original.
And we didn't have the money to... What happened was is we got signed, but they said, provide us with the 24-track. And we're like, uh-oh. We don't have the money to do the 24-track. And then all of a sudden, it was really strange. I was going out with Daryl. We were going, I think, oh, I don't even remember what club we were going to at the time. And he is ringing my doorbell, and I'm in my bathroom getting ready, doing my hair. And he comes screaming in, and he's like, I'm coming across the park, and I Think I Love You is being used for a commercial, and then he's like, blah, 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 and I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm hearing this on the radio, and then I'm like, you're crazy. The next day he calls me up. He's like, I saw it on television. Action Park is using your record, I Think I Love You, as their theme song. And I'm like, what? I call the manager. He does research on this. And indeed, yes, Action Park had taken the track without licensing it from us and used it for their commercials. And we, instead of having a lawsuit, they paid us our rightly wages for licensing the track, and that paid for the track of Sooner or Later to be made.
That's
the story behind Sooner or Later. If yeah, God's good graces, and by somebody just stealing something from us, we were able to create our actual hit. But then I Think I Love You became a cult classic. It's just too funny.
Well, we've got both Sooner or Later and I Think I Love You in the queue, but before we do that, we have VJC on the line for you guys. VJC, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter.
Hey,
good evening to you. It's so nice to talk to you.
You too, Ernest. How you doing? And Steve, I've never met him, but I've been hearing the show. Seems to be a guy that knows about remixing and production work. And I guess he's a heard about Steve. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on with on that end. But like I said, I've never met Ernest, but we've talked many times, and I've sent the tracks this evening to you, Peter. And I was trying to, obviously it was very something that you were looking to get before the show started, and I was frantic trying to find those three other tracks, which I also had on a CD, which Ernest did send me, but I forgot where I put it. So I was trying to download it from iTunes, and they didn't have it available. So, Ernest, you're going to have to contact iTunes. There's something wrong with those downloads.
Well, BJ, thank you so much for sending the tracks in this evening. I mean, you just saved the day. I mean, it was like a half-hour period. I think, Peter, you shot me like 80 emails so quickly, and I was like, uh-oh. I know DJC has it. Let's pray that he can get them to him. And you came through. Thank you
so
much.
You know, it's New York, New York. You know what I'm talking about? One New York to another. Like you were saying earlier, a little while ago, about how many people in New York and how we all, everybody seems to be coming from New York, the talent and everything, which is basically true, you know. It seems to be a lot of people that produce and remix stuff comes from New York. I don't know what it is. It's something must be in the air.
Well, as I said,
VJC, I know you jumped on that the instant you got home from work. I could almost time you. I knew. I got that first reply. I just knew that you had just walked to the door. Is that about right?
Yeah, I usually come home to work about 5, and then I always check my emails because people always send me emails, you know, DJs, listeners, and people like you and Ernest and everybody else. And I try to keep abreast of what's going on, and you know, that's how I am. I just don't like to not answer emails, which a lot of people, you know, tend to do, especially in an industry. If it's not something that they really want or hear, they just ignore it. But that's not me. I just try to. My thing is to help artists and remixers and DJs, whatever it is, to you know, put their talents out there. That's what it's about. It's not about me. It's about the music. You know.
Well, I got to thank you, and I'm sure people thank you too for playing us.
Absolutely.
And we are really thankful.
Okay, I don't want to take up more of your time.
I
know there's tracks
to
be played
so
and all this stuff. I just wanted to say, wanted to really give you out a shout. And Steve, even though I never met you, keep up the good work, because whatever I heard, especially some of the remixes that you did with Ernest, it's been some great work.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes, and thank you so much for joining us.
All right, Peter.
Good evening to you, sir.
Have a good night.
And thank
okay,
you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Ernest.
Okay, and I want to hear that next medley.
I'm trying. This couple of weeks, I've been so busy with other DJs.
Okay.
And running Disco 93.5. Okay?
Yay.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. That was Victor. Please stop by his site. It's a great time, and you can listen live via the Internet. And the site is disco935.net, and that is... that's the digits, 935, disco935.net, and he's a great guy. He just jumped right in to say that, because I didn't have all the, I had a lot of the older tracks, but I didn't have all the mixes we needed to do tonight, and I'm like, oh my God. And so anyway, I got in touch with Victor, and it's like, instantly they just started flying in, so I was so pleased. That was a great, he did that.
No, because there was that one email, like, I don't think we have this and this and this, and I'm like, I know you have it because on Tom's show you played that, and it's on that album.
That's too funny. Oh, Lord, I think he had misplaced the disc there for a little while. Well, we were talking about Sooner or Later when Victor called, and you had told us a story of how that got launched. That got launched. The financing for it came because someone stole a previous track, and then they finally paid you, which paid for the 24-track version of Sooner or Later. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, went out, and it was it came out, and I tell you, from the time that record came out, it just went right to the roof. I don't know. I think the reason is it's a really happy song. It's a really good feeling song. Whenever you hear that song, it makes you feel good. Just makes you feel good.
Well, Bob, I think you have that already somewhere in the queue there. The track that we want is Sooner or Later, and I believe it's labeled EK's Extended Club Mix. Bob's asking me in production chat.
Oh, and
which
there
track
is definitely
that.
A cowbell in this record.
Wonderful. You know, I love them.
Is this the first one we did or the second one?
This is the original.
The original. Let's hear it.
Wonderful. Bob, please go ahead and run that. Thank you. Sooner or Later, Ernest Cole. what a celebration. That's marvelous. That's the most amazing track.
Oh, thanks.
You know,
it was fun.
The energy is just fabulous.
And those were those claps and cowbells that you had to get on a chip.
Was that? I was thinking about that when I was listening to it. You know, I remember years ago, a company called Insonic, Bob Echo. And I've noticed it's listed in your equipment list. Weren't they the first ones to come out with like a wavetable chip, or did that exist before them?
That's pretty technical. Let me see. The first to be a wavetable chip.
Well, it was where they actually sampled the instrument, like instead of like synthesizing, they actually sampled it. Was the way I remember it.
Yeah, I think that one of the synths that I still have has a wavetable chip, and they also had the first inexpensive sampler. You know, because samplers back then were, you know, tremendously expensive, $10,000 or something for this instrument that could play back sounds. But they came out with the Mirage, an instrument called the Mirage that was within the, you know, the reach of most of us. And it had really grainy, nasty, kind of cool-sounding samples in it. But that was we were probably hearing that in there, too.
Ernest, when you first heard this, did you help out with the Sooner or Later mix, Ernest? It's just fabulous.
I was there from day one, in fact.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a very funny story with Sooner or Later. I was actually flown to Dayton, Ohio, because that's where the label was based. I was on Dice Records, or we were on Dice Records, which was distributed by Buddha Sutra Records. And the base was in Dayton, Ohio. And the owner was Tom Weiser, and he was very strong about doing his remix as well. And what he did is he brought in two Billboard DJs who had never in their life been in a studio before to do the remix. And after doing the mix with Steve, going in to do this mix, I'll tell the true story. I kind of was like, oh, my God, look what they've done to my song, Bob. They're on that. And I remember in the middle of a really torrential rainy night, and when they put sleigh bells in the record, I said, that's it.
Jesus.
I'm down in the studio with my shoulder pads on. With the label president chasing me and said, just trust me, it'll chart really high. And I'm like, okay, fine. Then I get the other side of the record, no questions asked. And that's the way it went on from there. And you know what? Both sides got played. Because what happened was is Casey Jones came in, and he actually helped that other mix, and by editing in it, editing, that's a weird word to say, editing?
It is strange.
And also Tom Weiser came in and worked on it. And both mixes got played. So it's a total success story. And there was many, many remixes of it, including the current remix that's on the Hits album that Steve did. Which I'm really listening to, because that's what I'm performing in my show currently. And hearing this is like, whoa, is that different? I mean, comparatively to the choreography that we do today, you know, it's just like totally, that's just like going back for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who it just boggles the mind. Who were these DJs that put sleigh bells?
One of them is Phil Bilbo DJ, so I don't want to say, but it worked out. You know, they ended up being great, you know? So, I know, foot in mouth.
They were imaginary people. They didn't really exist, yeah.
You know, everything is a learning experience. And if you've never done something before, how can you be expected to be doing it perfectly the first time?
Well, it's a lot different standing in clubs, you know, mixing tracks together. It's an entirely different thing to actually do a track.
I cannot DJ. And I tried it a long time ago, And I said, I'm going to leave it to you guys, and I respect you so much for what you do, but that's not my game. I know it. I'm not even going to try it. And
that's funny. It came natural to me, but to do a whole track just would horrify me with the complexity. I don't know.
No, see, that doesn't scare me at all. Going in and producing a record, that's a joy. But if putting like a whole night of records together would freak me out. I'd be like, oh no, that'd be train wreck. Serious train wreck.
Steve, did you DJ at one point in your past?
No, I never did. I kind of wish I did because it's a good background for being a remixer. I mean, there's a lot of the best remixers came out of being DJs because they get such a feel for what people respond to, you know? And then they just add on top of that the skills of producing records in the studio. Now, I came out of, you know, being a session player, playing in a rock band years ago in a jazz, you know, rock and jazz and pop bands. But I came more from the thing of being a player than being a DJ, which is helpful, too, because, you know, you can play.
I would listen to DJs, and one thing that Steve and I would do, or still would do, at the start of every recording session, we do what is called Disco 101, and we play what are the very top or very current records or imports. So we're abreast at what is happening right now, up to the moment, or about to come next.
Yes, we'd have to go to school.
Yes,
with every record,
we
call it
Disco 101.
Yep, that's right.
Interesting. I'm thinking back in the days that I used to DJ. One thing that I could not do, I just couldn't get into, you know, sometimes DJs do, well, back then, and we do what was called a mixtape, you know, where you do it, away from a crowd. I just couldn't do that. I could do it in a club. I could do it in front of people. It was all wonderful. I had a great time, but just to do it, like, I just couldn't make anything. Nothing seemed right. Is it that way? But you guys do it in a studio away from the crowd, so it's an exact opposite. It's very interesting, really.
Well, actually, it's an easier perspective because you really get to listen and get to get as close to perfection as you can at that period of time. I think the worst case scenario is your ears get tired.
Right, you have to develop techniques for keeping yourself sort of open to what's happening, so you're still responding on an emotional level rather than an intellectual level to what you're listening to. You have to focus on things to fix stuff, but then you have to unfocus and just experience the music as a listener would to see it, to make sure you're on the right track.
Exactly. And one thing I think we have learned to do, and this is a big lesson, was never mix a track on the same day you lay a track.
Right.
Because we've had some really bad things happen when we do that. Like, guitars being way too loud, or, you know, claps being way too loud, or vocals being, like, overshooting or something.
If I hear a track that somebody did and say that the guitar is too loud, I'll say, oh, did you record the guitar just before you mixed? I say, yeah, how'd you know? Because when you're recording the guitar, you have to have it loud so you can hear it, and your ear gets used to that, and you jump right into a mix, and it stays loud, you know?
And what is interesting, too, is if you walk away and you listen to the record for a little period of time before you go to mix it, you can find out where there are flaws, and you can try to do what's called post-production and correct the flaws, and then a lot of times what we have done is we will have a separate mix engineer come in and we'll set up the track while we're both there as producers. So we step away from it. We kind of divorce ourselves as writers and as artists and become the producers and just sort of listen to this wall of sound and try to make it the best it can possibly be. And a lot of the time people say, and don't even say, I know what you're going to say first, but still say come late because I don't want you here, Ernest, when all the drum sounds are being heard because your ears are going to get tired. come in when it's a little further into the mix, when everything's in. So that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the spirit certainly shows through.
Like, you know, the foot, the snare, the hi-hat, and all that, my ears are going to be warped by the time,
right.
You know.
And then he can come in later. I can work on it for 4 or 5 hours, and he can come in later and say, what were you thinking?
Oh, that's perfect. Well, tell us about the track, I Think I Love You. That's next in my list here, and this is one I have not heard that I've heard. Anyway, it's possible I have, but just don't know it. Tell us about that track, you guys.
Well, originally, we were signed to Unidisc Records, and we were signed on an EP deal because EPs were what was really trendy back then. And it was basically a way of selling the artist by doing like 4 to 6 songs. And that's exactly what we did. And one of the 4 songs was a cover of the Partridge Family's I Think I Love You, where I kind of think I came into music at. I remember that being one of the first records I listened to on radio and kind of inspired me to want to be in this whole pop dance music world, that whole David Cassidy era. And I always loved the song. I know it's total bubblegum, but I got to tell you,
I secretly liked it
totally
too, Ernest.
And when I performed it on stage, I used to open my show in bed and I had my dancers dressed as my butler and my maid, and they would dress me in my formal wear, except instead of my tucked pants, I wore an original Jean-Paul Gaultier skirt with combat boots.
And
my hair was as high as the roof, which Tom Wilson was referring to.
Yes. I could just see it now.
And during the break, they would take off the skirt, and I would have a wrestling suit underneath.
Oh, stars.
I mean, Steve, you remember those performances.
Oh, that's a machete twirling.
Huh?
That's what freaked me out, the machete twirling.
Oh, gosh! That is true.
You saw all this? Steve, you witnessed
this? Machetes on stage. I'm like, where did you learn how to do that?
You have got to be kidding me.
One of our records, which was on the CP, Come Alive at Night, which is featured on the Portrait of Ernest Cole, Volume 2, I hold machetes in the break.
I'm floored.
Swords.
Well, did you
when you were studying? The fire ones, but they wouldn't allow me because of the fire laws, and if they thought I would light the club on fire. I did do an aerial at the Ice Palace on Fire Island and break the neon.
Oh, Lord. Ernest, you must have picked a lot of that up back from the days when you were doing the choreography and the dancing and the theater.
I'm still doing that. We're working out the stuff for the new stuff for this season right now.
I see. Well, can we have a sneak preview? Are there any machetes involved this year?
No, actually, this show is really, I gotta say, classy and really stylish and sleek and slick and hot. Hot. Slick. It's like high gloss, definition defined. It's a little bit more mature on its call. It's hot. Sleek. That's all I can say about it. That's the way I'm going to describe it.
Do videos of these ever end up on YouTube from like the previous season?
I have like a ton on go to YouTube. In fact, there's 2 To Save the Love videos, and the new one was just added, I think, last week, the Tom Walton and Julian Marsh mix was added to YouTube.
I'll be done.
And you might have to go to Ernest Cole 1 to see it, but it is there.
Well, that's excellent. I guess I didn't realize
that.
Well, you know,
Follow Your Heart, I Love It Here to Stay, Don't You Want My Love, Stomp, Only You, To Save the Love, To Save the Love 207, the new To Save the Love remix, they're all there.
Well, Steve, what part did you have in the I Think I Love You mix that we're about to hear?
It is the original mix, right, Ernest?
You did everything.
Yeah, I did. That's all me.
Okay.
We started that in the same apartment, we started at M57th Street. Do you remember?
Yeah.
The same apartment where Jonathan was coming over with the Rent song. Like,
same one, same time.
Yeah.
This is the one that did Chris Lord-Alge mixed, right?
Yeah, this was with Chris Lord-Alge, and we went in.
Starting
you remember, we actually went in. He would only work certain hours, and I think we had to show up at the studio at 4 in the morning, and we would work.
Not quite that late, but pretty late.
We worked until like 11 or 12 in the morning, mixing the record. It was quite incredible. He was quite the artist.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch him work. And he's still, you know, one of the top mixers around.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff he's done for Tina Turner has been amazing. There was one scary moment. There was one scary moment in the mix session of this record that I remember. I don't know if you remember, Steve, but he actually cut that 24-track tape and did an edit with a razor blade. If he had cut it wrong, the whole record would have been gone. And it was flawless. It came out perfect.
Yeah, he had a cool technique at that time because you couldn't automate the mix. So he would mix short sections, you know, 4 or 8 bars, and then stop, and then figure out the next section and just do that, and then cut the whole, and record that to another piece of tape, which he would then cut together with a razor blade and tape.
Well, I'm trying to remember the old 24-track reel-to-reels. Was that 1-inch tape?
2-inch. The 24-track tapes were 2-inch tape.
Wow, though, that's daring to actually cut a 2-inch tape. That's pretty scary. You just
don't
want to mess
with it. We were thinking, like, oh, my gosh, our baby could be killed right now. It was really scary. I mean, bullets of sweat were coming out of my forehead.
Amazing.
Well, you can always tape it back together again if you get it wrong.
and then the topper, it becomes an Action Park commercial where in the opening there's this like these cascade sounds, and what do they put to it? Now imagine a video of this. A fat woman coming down a water slide with her legs open coming at me. That's what I want to see.
Oh. Oh Lord, what the stories you guys tell. Well, let's run the track that I've always secretly liked this back even when the Cowsills that did it originally that you said?
No,
it was
the Partridge Family.
The Partridge, that's right. The Partridge
Family. You remember them? Shirley Jones on Friday night?
Yes, I do. I secretly liked it, and I'm sure I'll love this. This is the I Think I Love You track, all by Ernest and all by Steve.
I think I love you. woke up with this feeling I didn't know how to deal with. So I just aspired to myself. I hide it to myself. Never talk about it. And did not go and shout it when you walked into my room. I think I love you.
You guys, I can't begin to tell you how much fun I've had during that track. And the chat room is just nuts. Our chat room is actually fairly sophisticated. It puts up animated colored icons, you know, in the whole bit. They're posting disco balls and a guy behind a couple of turntables with the people dancing. There's a dancing cowboy. They have a John Travolta picture with my head on it.
Oh, my goodness.
I know they're merciless. They're merciless in there. Oh, God. Anyway, we were all actually dancing. I'm sorry you're not in the chat room. We're actually dancing. What a fun track.
I've got to tell you, it has become a cult classic. And the one thing I can tell you about that track, there is an interesting story. That is actually one of the reasons I got signed to Sony, was one of the heads of Sony was a DJ at that period of time in history. And that's how he got to know me, was through that track and Come Alive at Night and That'd Be Good. And he was like, we're putting the hits album out first, and then we'll do your other albums. But the one thing that has to go on there is I Think I Love You. He, like, hands down demanded that. I was like stunned. I was like, I Think I Love You. Like, of all my tracks, why that one? And he's like, Brian was like, trust me. And they were so correct. It's gone into a whole other generation. You know, they're playing it out now, and it's, like, hysterical. 20 years later, who would have thought? I might have to put it back in the show.
I wouldn't blame you a bit. Steve, did you have a ball doing that? The music is absolutely stunning.
That was fun. My favorite part is still the don't know what it's all about. I know, that's just so weird, that part, that little part in the middle.
That was
a full-on production. We had a guy helping us out with the drum programming, and we had backup singers,
was,
like you heard, yeah, a guitar player.
Yeah, Billy Simmons.
Yeah. He had one of the people that had the Simmons drums back then, and I don't remember who the singers were, but they sounded great.
They were Annie and Sybil and Daryl, who actually were on Flashdance, remember? They had just run tour with Irene.
Uh-huh. Well, that's right. That's right. There was the Irene Cara connection, too. Daryl was friends with her.
You remember Flashdance? What a Feeling?
Oh, sure. I've got some wonderful remixes of some of that stuff. Irene Cara is just fabulous stuff.
Yeah,
everybody loved
her. The whole same circle. Like, same group. It's too funny. It's like Upper West Side, New York City. I don't know what to tell you. Or West Side, New York City.
You know, listen to you. You know, New York has always sounded a little bit scary to me. But the more people I talk to from New York, the more I think I really just need to leave here, just head on up. The cold would probably kill me, but I think I'd have a ball the way out.
It is cold. It is cold. But you know what? I want you to play something, and this is, I've got an idea, because I think this will just freak out Steve. We have a song in our catalog, and I know it's Steve's favorite song, and it's a little bit different for me, and I'd really love you to play it. And it's a song called I Still Love You.
Oh,
I know
great.
You have it.
Yes, and we do have it. Now, I need to point out where it's...
I want to have it played for Steve, because it's a rare classic of ours, and... Go ahead. That's all I can say.
I'm looking for, and we do have the track, I Still Love You, but I need to point out that I don't know how long the track is. It's 10:51, so we may have to fade it just a little bit early, but if we start it now, maybe we can fit it in. I just don't know the length. Bob, do you have I Still Love You queued up there in the player? If so, please run that one. Thank you.
Looking at a picture of you.
Guys, a beautiful track, and I have to say it's we're going to need to wrap the show pretty quickly. But I don't want to just throw you off. I hate it when I have to end the show quickly. But Ernest, please tell us why that was special for Steve.
It's always been his most favorite track, and weirdly enough, I thought "You Make Me Weak" was, and I was corrected, and he told me it was "I Still Love You," and Steve.
I don't know. I've
always loved the song.
Too.
Say again.
"You Make Me Weak" is awful good too. That's right. That track does. That just listening. I haven't heard it for a long time, and it still talks to me. You know, still it is really good.
You know, it's like picking between children. How can you choose which is your favorite song?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a wonderful way to put it, Ernest.
If you want to know what my favorite song is, the one I'm working on right now.
You guys, you've both been delightful. Steve, it's been wonderful to have you on the show the first time. And
thank
Ernest,
you,
it's always a pleasure to have you back. Ernest, maybe we can be in touch sometime soon about the coach you talked about a while back. We'll have to email about that. You talked to a vocal coach who's taught everybody in the whole world.
In fact, as she has confirmed, Miss Katie Agresta will make an appearance in December on your show.
Oh, it's fabulous. We'll email about that. And Steve, you're a wonderful guest. Thank you for putting up with all our craziness. We love you both.
And I want to
thank you, Peter.
Yes, and I just want to thank Steve for coming on the show and being the most fantastic producer. I mean, I really owe my career to you, Steve. You're like it. You're awesome.
Thank you.
And thank you both.
Too.
And
you
also,
too,
you know,
truly.
Cross your fingers for tomorrow night, and because let's hope we win Best Band record of the year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for producing that vocal. I have no idea what's going to happen, but
okay.
If it wins, yay! If not, I'm so honored.
That's right.
Wonderful. We got to wrap now, guys. I love you both, and thank you both for being on the show. And good night to you both, and God bless, and thank you so much, guys. Stay tuned. We're going to have the horn section coming up, and then after that, we have a live John Fox. And love you guys. Glad you were here. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is warning Congress to pass legislation containing more money for the war in Iraq before leaving for the holiday break. Democrats say no. Meantime, Pentagon leaders say they'll begin layoffs. The White House warns that U.S. troops are at risk with a lack of funding. Martial law in Pakistan will be lifted next month as ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. He was sworn in today for his third term. Al Jazeera TV today airing a portion of the latest audio tape, reportedly of al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In the tape, a voice that resembles that of bin Laden urges European nations to pull their support for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. To cut greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030, Americans won't have to drive less or cut back on lighting their homes. A report from two business groups says just buying more fuel-efficient cars and energy-saving appliances will be enough to cut emissions between one-third and one-half. A jump in the price of oil reflected the shutdown of an underground pipeline that supplies one-fifth of all U.S. crude. The pipeline travels between Canada and the Midwest. It caught fire yesterday in Minnesota, killing two workers. In St. Petersburg, Florida, last night, Republican presidential contenders debated face-to-face during a CNN live TV broadcast, also carried online via YouTube. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squaring off over illegal immigration, each accusing the other of using the services. In Sudan, a court has found a British teacher guilty of inciting religious hatred because she let her 7-year-old students name a text.